This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Well, it may only be Monday, but it is already a busy week in Washington. President Trump continued his war of words with four Democratic congresswomen, the Squad, calling them on Twitter a very racist group of troublemakers. And this comes just 2 days before special counsel Robert Mueller's planned testimony before Congress. For more on these and other happenings on the Hill, we're joined now on the line by Representative Joe Kennedy III. He represents the Massachusetts 4th Congressional District. Congressman Kennedy, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks so much for having me. Pleasure to be with you.
So, Congressman, I want to start with the president's attacks on the Squad, which is Representatives Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, and your Massachusetts colleague, Ayanna Pressley. Today, the president said, just this afternoon, to reporters in the Oval Office that, quote, they must hate our country, end quote.
What they've said about Israel, what they've said about our country, when they talk about disgusting people, when they talk the way they talk, when the one mentioned that brown people should speak for brown people and Muslim people should speak for Muslim people. And you hear all this. It's not what our country is all about. No, I think they're very bad for our country. I think they're very bad for the Democrat Party. I think you see that. And they're pulling the Democrats way left. Nobody knows how to handle them.
Congressman Kennedy, you serve in the House with these congresswomen. Ayanna Pressley is from the next district over from yours. So what is your response to all this?
So, one, the comments are disgusting. They're outrageous. There's no place in politics for them. They're way over the line. And, you know, the frustrating thing is I think I, and along with most of our country, have said the same thing now day after day after day for a week, and the president doesn't seem to care, which I think is the larger point here, which is these are not the comments of a president who is proud of his record as president of the United States. This is not a comment of a president that is confident about his reelectoral prospects. This is not a president that is confident about his ability to win an argument when it comes to the policies and priorities that matter for the vast majority of American families. Has he, under his tenure here, been effective at trying to make sure that everybody in this country gets access to the health care that they need when they need it at a price that families can afford? Has he been effective at making sure that a middle-class job provides a middle-class lifestyle for American families? Has he been effective at making sure that people are getting priced out of their own homes? Has he been effective at taking on some of the biggest challenges that our country is facing? And the answer to all of that is no. And so what he's resulting to is comments that we haven't seen in American politics for 50 years at least. And forget dog whistles, just blatant racist politics and policy statements to try to distract from a record that is, I think, a failure for the American public. And he knows better. His team knows better. Republican colleagues of mine know better. And it's time that they stood up and did something about it.
So, Congressman, you've talked about the president saying things that haven't been heard before. I think part of what the quote we heard from him a minute ago was in response to something Representative Pressley said a week ago Saturday at a Netroots conference. She said, quote, this is the time to shake the table. We don't need any more brown faces that don't want to be a brown voice. We don't need Muslims that don't want to be a Muslim voice, end quote. Also some new language. So what's really going on here? What do you think this is really about?
Look, I'm not going to speculate as to what exactly Congresswoman Pressley meant by the comments. It's obviously a question for her. What I can say is that Congresswoman Pressley Ayanna has been a powerful voice throughout her career, working not just on the city council, but for John Kerry when he was a senator from Massachusetts, and even for my father when he was a congressman here, trying to make sure that our system of democracy is more open and more inclusive for so many voices that have been shut out. And as she said, one of the slogans essentially of her campaign were to bring your own chair. If there's not a seat at the table for you, you bring your own. And you force our country that has dedicated itself to these ideals around democracy, yet from our founding documents fallen short on those values, from all men being created equal. And when those words were written, we meant rich, white, Protestant men. And that's what the term men meant. And we realized that over our 240-plus year history that we've got an awful lot more expansion to go. And Congressman Pressley has been a powerful voice to try to make sure that those institutions are as inclusive as we hope that at some point they will be. And today they're not. And I think the fact that is so threatening to the president and to his brand of politics speaks to the very nature as to what this debate is really about and the reason why he feels the need to distract America into this just gut guttural debasement of American political system rather than run on the policies and issues that I think should be guiding our discussions today.
So, Congressman, you refer to this as a distraction. The president's distracting America. Could it be argued that it's actually a calculated strategy by the White House to run against these four congresswomen instead of having to run against the Democrats vying for the presidency?
But I think you would rather the distraction is the strategy. You'd rather try to force a discussion off of essentially, again, blatantly racist comments and demeaning comments by the president rather than actually engage in questions about health care, access to health care, and the cost of prescription drugs, which, remember, was going to be his number one policy coming out of the White House this term, which he's done nothing on. And walked back his major policy of trying to lower prescription drugs just a couple of weeks ago. He talked about doing a massive infrastructure bill until he had a temper tantrum in the White House and walked back policies and an attempt at an effort by Democratic leadership to actually engage in infrastructure. He's still trying to pass a series of policies to essentially ignore the fact that global warming, climate change is even a thing, let alone trying to do anything about it. You're seeing a foreign policy that is guided by the fact that Obama did everything wrong rather than coming up with a single guiding policy as to what a stronger U.S. engagement in the Far East, in the Middle East, in China, in North Korea, with Russia and Europe could possibly look like. There's no answers on any of these things.
So, Congressman,
and so when you don't have an answer, you try to distract, and that's clearly what this is.
So you've just given a laundry list of policies on which you're critical of the president. Representatives Omar and Tlaib have made comments that members of your own party have criticized, from using expletives about the president to comments about Israel. Are they giving Trump fodder for this, as you call it, distraction strategy unnecessarily?
Look, when it comes to a Democratic Party, I think one of the things that is now written and said an awful lot about is the fact that Democrats don't all read from the same songbook when it comes from to the implementation on policies. Look, of course we don't. We just ran the entire midterm election was based off the fact that the president and his supporters have one vision for the future of our country, and we have a very different one. And we ran that strategy in 435 different districts across every single corner of this country, and we won. And
this
we won
is in 2018,
in a pretty resounding way.
In the midterm
I'm
elections.
Sorry?
You
in
mean in 2018.
Yes, in 2018, yes. But the idea then is that you have a uniform application of these values or uniform definition of these values, and that get applied differently when it comes to healthcare and immigration and taxes and the economy in local districts. What is quote-unquote the right answer for Boston or in Attleboro, Massachusetts, where I am right now, is going to be different from rural Oklahoma. That's fine.
So
but
you said
you can't expect them to run a campaign based off of that strategy, and then the moment we win, to have everybody all of a sudden sit there and say, hey, there's going to be one answer for everything. What you do see is there's not a single Democrat out there, including the four that you just mentioned, that do not believe that the underlying value of health care policy in this country is that people get access to the health care that they need when they need it, period. There's not a single Democrat that disagrees with the fact that climate change is a real thing.
So I want
the federal government needs to do something about it.
I don't want to move off that health care comment for a minute, Congressman, because I want to ask you a question there. It seems like what's emerging during the Democratic primary debates is a split in the Democratic Party on attitudes towards health care, with some coming down towards a more universal Medicare for all and some backing the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. Where do you stand on that?
So, the answer to that is clearly both, because I think...
I'm not sure I understand how you could stand on both. I mean, one is universal, the other has private insurance as a component of it.
Because the idea... So I'll get to that very quickly.
Okay.
The framing of the issue, that you just said, is Obamacare or single payer, choose one. The underlying value to both of them is that people get access to the health care that you need when you need it at a price you can afford, period. That's what unites Democrats. Republicans believe taking health care away from 30 million people is actually a policy success. They celebrated that with champagne in the Rose Garden. So the difference between where Democrats are on this are literally a matter of degree versus where Democrats versus Republicans are. You could not get more different.
So let's
be clear on that.
So are you saying that there's no real distinction between the Democratic candidates on how health care implementation would happen, that they're all kind of calling off the same?
Of course there's a difference, but what the debate is how does the government, what role should the government play to ensure that everybody gets access to the health care that you need when you need it? That's what underlines the debate. between essentially incremental pathway forward on the Affordable Care Act to a public option to a single-payer system. Where the debate is on the Republican side of the aisle is repeal Obamacare without any policy put in place to repeal it or to replace it, just repeal it and then we'll figure it out. Those differences, the differences in degree on the Democratic side versus the contrast with what Republicans are putting forth, could not be more stark. And yet we are mired in a debate as to the difference between single payer on the one side versus what was supposed to be Medicaid expansion uniformly across the country, which was going to be a big step forward on this. Now, you mentioned the private insurance piece to this. I'm a supporter of Medicare for All, and I'm a proud supporter of Medicare for All. And Medicare for All stands for the idea, again, that you get access to health care that you need when you need it in this country, period. No country in the world has been able to figure out a single-payer system without some form of private insurance. So do I think we should give it a shot? Yeah, I do. Does it mean that we're going to be able to provide access to all of the services that we need to everybody that needs to be able to access them at a timeline that people are going to accept without some form of private insurance? I'm not sure, but we sure as heck better give that a shot because that's what I believe everybody in this country deserves.
Okay,
there's a way to get through that policy debate while also drawing the distinction between what Democrats are focused on and the comparison of what Republicans are offering, which is next to nothing.
So given the momentousness of the testimony that's coming up later this week, I'd like to shift gears for just a minute. We did mention that Special Counsel Robert Mueller is expected to testify on the Hill Wednesday. WBUR and NPR will have special coverage of his testimony. But Congressman Kennedy, what will you be looking for in his testimony?
I will be looking. I do not expect the special counsel to go much beyond what he wrote in his report. However, I was a former prosecutor. If you know what you're looking at when you read that report, it is a devastating recollection or story as to what the actions that the president engaged in. So, just very briefly on this, the special counsel on a number of occasions indicates that there is substantial evidence to indicate that the president committed obstruction of justice. He says that in a little bit of coded language, but I would expect our colleagues to ask some very pointed questions that contain his quotes and the quotes of that report back to Mr. Mueller to understand and elicit very specifically what that report actually says. And I think as people do that and the response that you will expect from Mr. Mueller, because the responses that you need are already in that text, which means, as I've talked about even with my Republican colleagues, if you read that report, it becomes awfully hard to come up with any other conclusion than the fact that the president obstructed justice.
You have said that, you have said that reading the report put you over the edge towards impeachment. What puts you over the edge, and does that put you at odds with your party leadership?
I think reading the full report, again, so I read the full report. I talked to legal experts. I talked to former prosecutors. I talked to current federal prosecutors. I did a fair amount of research on my own. And I think after you go through all of that, it comes hard to come to any other conclusion than the fact that, one, there's substantial evidence to indicate the president obstructed justice. And if you believe that the president obstructed justice, I don't think there's a whole lot else you can do other than say it's time to begin an impeachment inquiry. Does that put me at odds with our other members of a caucus? Yeah, of course it does. There's about, I don't know what the final count is at the moment, but about 80 or 90 or so folks that have come out in favor of beginning those impeachment proceedings. My colleagues, I respect my colleagues. I respect the fact that some of them aren't there yet. I will continue to engage with them in those conversations. And I respect the fact that our leadership is going to be reflective of where our party is. But again, if you're looking for a Democratic Party to be in lockstep, you join the wrong party. So.
Okay.
We'll engage in that debate as we go.
Before we let you go, I do want to touch on immigration for a moment because you visited a border detention facility earlier this month in El Paso and Clint, and you described these centers as a betrayal of our values. What is the solution to where we are on immigration?
So, look, immigration itself is a big problem and it's a big challenge, and there's a lot that can be done about it. So part of it depends a little bit as to how you define it. With regards to the aspect that I saw and I witnessed down at the border, and I've been down there 3 or 4 times over the course of the past year, I think one part that the American public needs to understand is for somebody that steps on our soil and claims asylum, they have broken exactly 0 federal laws, none, nothing. There's nothing illegal about coming, setting foot on American soil and claiming asylum. And if they do, they should be treated as through a humanitarian process as that claim is adjudicated. That is 100% not what is taking place at the moment. We are the most powerful nation on earth. We should be worried when people stop trying to seek asylum on our shores rather than when people do seek asylum on our shores. There are ways to try to strengthen the system surge immigration judges to make sure that there are we are adjudicating these dockets far more quickly, that if they are actually provided, individuals are provided with legal services and lawyers, we're going to be able to understand which cases are more likely to hold water, to be viable claims of asylum. Which ones aren't? You're going to increase the likelihood. All the data shows that you increase the likelihood that folks show up for those court dates. There's ways to make investments in the system to make the system far more effective and efficient, and to provide the services to folks that are fleeing violence and sexual exploitation and human trafficking the way that we actually say that we want to do. And we can do that. We are just choosing not to. And that's the 2 points to this. One, Customs and Border Patrol could have welcomed the 15 or so members of Congress with whom I went to that facility with open arms and said, look, we are at a crisis point. We need your help. Help us tell this story. They tried to keep us in the dark and shut us out in a way that I think was just shameful.
I'm so sorry to interrupt. We've got to wrap, Congressman. Congressman
Great.
Joe Kennedy III
Thanks
represents
so
the Massachusetts 4th Congressional District. Thanks so much. We lost him there. That's great. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.